water.
How's that going? That's very
yep,
recording.
We're all set.
If everyone had a chance to look at the minutes, last committee's minutes,
do the motion.
I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes.
Second it.
Okay. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Very good. Okay. I thought I'd take the agenda out of order, if it's okay with the rest of the committee. We have a guest here this evening, Tina Leach, the Director of Public Relations for the National Alliance on Mental Illness. So I would like to welcome you
Thank
to
you.
Our committee. And I thought we'd have a chance to introduce ourselves as well. And I'm the chair of the Public Health and Social Service Committee. I represent District 14, that's Town of Shongham and Wilmington.
Herb Litz, I represent the town of Highland and the town of Platicle in District 9.
Chris Allen, I represent town and village authorities in Malvern, District 2.
I mistakenly took that exit. I kind of saw a little bit of authorities.
Oh, really?
I did.
Wow.
I'm Carl Belfilio. I represent the Silver Sets District 8.
I'm Nettie Thompson.
Oh, you're Nettie. Okay. Right. You help me out? Okay. Find the address. Okay.
And I'm Jeanette Provenzano, and I represent Kingston.
Okay, that said, welcome.
Thank you. So, should I get
sure.
these? Okay,
absolutely.
We'll do the pass around? Okay. So, you know, I don't know how much anybody knows about the National Alliance on Mental Illness because, you know, I sure as heck didn't know anything about mental health a few years ago until my daughter was diagnosed with mental illness. And, you know, kind of mental health became a priority for me in my life because it was a necessity. My daughter was self-harming every 3 weeks. She tanked in school. So we were in and out of the hospital, you know, every 3 weeks, basically, you know, and the bills were, you know, piling up, and I really was afraid that she was going to end her life. So tonight, you know, I kind of wanted to go over the programs that we offer, and I'm kind of going to wear a couple of different hats because we all are volunteer. Our programs director couldn't make it tonight. She's actually doing a support group and teaching, so I'm kind of wearing the hat of program director. But again, you know, people step in whenever they need to because we are all volunteer. We all have another job during the day. But I'm always amazed at how much dedication there is in this organization. So, you know, I'm going to read a little bit, but I'm going to ad lib a little bit too. But, you know, right now, you know, my daughter is doing very well. So, you know, instead of mental, you know, illness, you know, being the key, you know, I'm focusing on recovery with her. And, you know, it's interesting that once I started getting into all this, you know, mental health stuff, I realized, you know, recovery is one of those things that is a compelling concern in America. You know, we celebrate people who survive from cancer. We congratulate the athlete who returns from, you know, devastating injury. However, sometimes recovery is not sort of the terminology for people with mental illness because in the past we didn't really know much about mental illness. You know, it was like, you know, Aunt Mary was in the attic. We just put her away there. There was the treatment wasn't out there. There was not enough research. And also with the stigma and not enough education, you know, pretty much we didn't see people with mental illness having a life. And now, you know, we're seeing that, you know, with a team, with education from the support system, we're really seeing that people can have a very productive life and not be a burden, you know, to the taxpayers, you know, basically. I'll tell you a little bit about NAMI. You know, we are the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and we are one of the nation's largest grassroots organizations that focuses on the support system as just opposed to the consumer. There's about 1,200 affiliates that are 501c3 across the nation, and, you know, we are the Mid-Hudson affiliate. We have about 165 dedicated members, and, you know, we have also our we do a lot of advocacy work at the local, state, and federal. We actually went to the legislative conference in Albany recently, you know, and, you know, we do just pretty much all around a lot of grassroots, I noticed. We were founded in 1981, and we've reached over about 10,000 people in the Mid-Hudson Ulster County last year alone. The last few months, we've noticed a huge increase in our membership, about 25%. And Poughkeepsie Mental Health of America, Andrew Grady, talked with his staff, and they gave us an in-kind office donation. So we actually have a headquarters now, so it's very exciting for us. And, you know, we're having a ribbon cutting, and we'd like to invite all of you to come to that. You know, this year I noticed we had made a decision to have a major initiative to actually collaborate with other mental health agencies, with schools, with businesses, just on all different levels. In fact, what was interesting, we had a ShopRite advocate, Tina Walker, come to us, and I was doing some research because, you know, she had told me that they have a huge problem with clinical depression and their employees not showing up. And I came up with a figure, which I had to double check. It was $193.5 billion were lost in revenue due to serious mental health issues. To me, that's a heck of a lot.
ShopRite.
And, you know, what's interesting is Tina Walker has a mental health background. She's worked in the mental health industry for quite a long time. They hired her to do nutrition, and she felt that, you know, you can't just feed the person right and have the depression go away. So NAMI decided to kind of work with her and come up with the strong body, strong mind concept. And so, you know, we are going to go in and talk to the managers about, you know, some empathy training, understanding what mental health issues are, what depression is. It's a real thing. You know, how come up with some strategies, but also the other side of the component is work with them to get a gym membership with Gold's Gym is what we're working with, to give them an alternative, because, you know, we see that if the person that's suffering from depression has some physical activity as well as, you know, the proper meds, proper talk therapy and the support, they can come to work, you know. So Tina and I have been working on that. She's really on top of it. So I was it was interesting to see all of a sudden, you know, having that happen. We also had recently an SSI-SSDI workshop through the Office of Mental Health. Dutchess Community College helped us fund that. And it was interesting because we ended up having 68 people on the waiting list. And there was a lot of people from Ulster County actually coming out, both as consumers, both as advocates, and also other social workers. And it was great. They all learned a lot of stuff. They, you know, hands down, they said, Monday morning, I'm going to go back. I already know of four or five cases that I can fix. So, you know, we'd like to hold something like that in Ulster as well so we can reach even further, because we were surprised. We had people coming from Albany, and we only did an internal email. We did not do any advertising. We were going to do it, but I'm glad we did, actually. Yeah. You know, it was kind of frightening, you know. Yeah. But so, you know, again, those are some of the things that we've been doing, you know, with businesses and also working with other, you know, like the Office of Mental Health. Our programs are our, you know, big things that we offer, and they all are free to the community. There's two programs. So you can see there's the Family to Family and then the NAMI Basics. Our Family to Family is sort of the umbrella signature program. It's a 12-week program. We've decided to do 12 weeks. Some NAMIs prefer to do it in twice a week, so it would be 6 weeks. We found that the information is so much at each class, but also, you know, there's a lot of skill set training. We'd like the family to actually go home, digest the information, try that skill, come back, give us some feedback. You know, other people in the class will comment. And the big thing is, you know, having that peer support is really important. And when you have the 12 weeks, you get a lot of friendships in there. It's amazing how people come in so stressed out, you know, feeling lost, walking on eggshells, and there's no hope. And then when they see other families talking about their situation, you know, we joke, you know, we come in, we all want to throw away our problems, but then we listen to everybody else's problems, and you go, you know what, I'll take my problem, I'm fine, you know. Yeah. So we're seeing, even after 12 weeks, a lot of families continue to talk to each other. They call each other, they email each other, Facebook each other. So that program has been really successful, and I just wanted to read you, you know, one of the responses. And it's interesting because the woman actually responded to me. She emailed me today, ironically. But Debbie Valentin wrote, "Since coming to the NAMI Family to Family 12-week course, it has made a big change in the way we are able to deal with our mentally ill son. I wish I attended this course 14 years ago. Since onset of symptoms, my son has been hospitalized 13 times. If I had the knowledge like I do now, circumstances could have been very different. The support found at the meetings is above all most important. To know that you are not alone going through this life of chaos with a loved one. I have been able to remove the guilt I felt with empathy for my son." Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the
powerful.
But I think, you know, that, you know, actually is really hands down everybody's response when they come out of the class. They come in very angry at their loved one. Why are you doing this to us? Or why are you doing this to yourself? You crashed a car, you've gotten into jail, you've gotten pregnant, you know, now you're on drugs. It's a lot of guilt, you know, and when they come out and switch and flip that and it becomes more empathetic, they're able to deal with the crises better, as well as understand that, you know, there's no cure for mental illness. You know, this is not a sprint, it's a marathon. So we see a lot of families, you know, without the oxygen when they come in, and we tell them, put the oxygen mask on yourself, you know, as in an airplane, they say, before you can help your loved one, you got to help yourself, you know, and change and educate yourself. Another comment that I thought was really interesting, too, was this is from Dale Ottens. She said, joining NAMI and participating in family-to-family program has given me a voice to effectively communicate and advocate for my daughter and me. It has empowered me and given me hope for my child and her future. And, you know, recently Dale's son actually, or daughter actually relapsed. And what was interesting was when she came into the class, her daughter was in the hospital, actually at St. Francis. And she actually, you know, this time around it was very different, her emotions. You know, she was more calm. She said she could talk to her of her daughter's clinicians, even though that she was an adult. She was able to effectively communicate and be part of the treatment, and she seemed very hopeful, and it was very different than the initial time that she came in, where she was just literally cried, I think, for the first 6 weeks of class. You know, she was in my class that I took. So it was really interesting to see the emotions de-escalate. So that, you know, that program is was launched in 1991 in Vermont, and it's been implemented in 49 states, District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, also in Canada, Italy, and Mexico. And there's been more than 3,500 trained volunteers, and there's the statistic that I got was 300,000 families have graduated from family to family. For us, we've had about 15 classes since 2005, and we have about 450 graduates. In Kingston, Chris and Mark Duran are our teachers, and they've been teaching, they've taught since 2012. They've taught four family-to-family classes with 65 graduates. Currently, they're teaching a class that has 22 participants, and that is really to max capacity. It's hard because, you know, you have to listen and, you know, try to engage. Yeah. And you know, we're hoping, obviously, the next round we will be able to get another session in for Kingston as well. So basically, you know, we've also one component, and you know, we were talking to Judy. I can never pronounce her last name. Is it Dagmagent? We are at a meeting with the children's providers, and you know, we stress with NAMI in that, you know, in our class at the end we give every family a toolkit, and we, you know, our goal is to get that family help. And it doesn't matter whether it's with NAMI or it's not, it's with ASTER, with MHA. Our goal is to help the family. So, you know, we are really into collaborating with other agencies. We're not about selling NAMI. We tell everybody not one size fits all. You know, our program may help you. It might help your neighbor. You know, it may not, you know, you might not find it helpful now, but if you come back in 6 months, it might. So, again, you know, we really go into this as a, you know, very, you know, open playing field. We don't ask any of the agencies to give up their identity. We ask them to be complementary to each other. And we've been finding that really has been working with us. So, you know, just briefly, NAMI Basics is sort of the underneath of the family. It focuses on kids from 5 to 18. Well, I forgot to mention, too, there's a SAMHSA report about family. So it's been recognized, you know, as evidence-based, and we have seen, hands down, across the board, not just with NAMI Mid-Hudson, that family-to-family has been very effective for the family members. So with the NAMI Basics, it focuses on kids from 5 to 18, and, you know, that's when a lot of mental illness surfaces, and it's really critical for parents to, you know, have that early onset, you know, diagnosis so that the symptoms don't progressively get worse, and the kid can have actually a very productive life, because if they get diagnosed under the right treatment and the right meds. What's interesting, too, is, you know, this class was very condensed. It's typically taught in 6 weeks, but a lot of families said that they just couldn't find babysitters, you know, for their children. So we condensed it into three classes. And, again, the curriculum is in your folder. I was very skeptical because I thought, 3 weeks, I mean, this is like the magic, you know, really, 3 weeks is going to make a change. But I was really shocked. I attended the class. First class, a lot of information about different, you know, ADHD, OCD, ODD, even a new one, disruptive mood dysregulation disorder, which when I look back, that's exactly what my little daughter had. I mean, that, you know, a lot of temper tantrums, long, lengthy things. You know, it wasn't because she was sensitive, it's because she had DMDD. But what's interesting, too, is we have all the families, you know, have their material out, and we give them a highlighter. And when we start doing, going through the criteria for each of the illnesses, it's really interesting to see, you know, you're highlighting important stuff, and also you see the light bulb go off. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of the parents who are struggling with what's going on go, oh, my gosh, I think my kid has this. And they have come back to us within that week on the second day of class and said, you know, I asked my pediatrician, could this be it? And they got a referral. And, you know, in fact, one of the kids in the class got diagnosed with something. And so, you know, again, we found that. I thought that was really amazing. The second class is about skill sets. And again, I was a little skeptical. Like, could these parents really take what we're telling them that it'll work and actually implement it in their lives? And they did. They came back on the third class, and I wanted to read to you this one lady. I thought, you know, she needs an award because her name is Jessica, and she lives in Wingdale. She has triplets that are age 11, and she has a 9-year-old. And all four, I know, when I first said that, I was like, what? Four boys, all with brain disorders. And she has a husband who has OCD. So, again, she came in, you know, she's a very intelligent woman. She works at a law firm, you know. Yeah, I know. She came in just sad, you know, and just lost. She had all the kids in treatment. They were all seeing therapists. She said it was chaos in her house. And I thought, even without a brain disorder, I don't know how she ran that household, but she told us she learned a lot of the I statements, being effective instead of being right all the time. Even on her husband, she did the skills. And she came and said that she had the best week of her life in a long time. And total calmness. I thought, wow. She said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to keep on doing it because I know it works. So, you know, for us, that was a wonderful thing. You know, the other thing which was interesting is that class that we had, half of the attendants were grandparents. We were kind of shocked that a lot of these grandparents are actually raising their grandchildren. And Tom, who was adorable, you know, he came in. He has two granddaughters, both struggling with a lot of mental health issues, you know, a lot of learning disabilities, and a nephew who's 23, substance, drug abuse, also bipolar. And he wrote that, he said, without this class, I would still be in the dark. This is by far the best educational opportunity that I have ever encountered. And what was happening that his daughter really wasn't sharing a lot of information about their grandchildren and, you know, the kids. And he found this so effective that he was able to, since the kids were not adults, he was able to talk to the therapist, the school therapist, the teachers, even the psychologist, you know, and the therapist to get some more information. And he said the whole family dialogue changed. Instead of screaming and yelling, it was calm, you know. The kids were still acting out, but the adults were actually being effective. And so, you know, again, he's taking our family class now also for his nephew. There's two other programs I'll briefly touch on. One is called In Our Own Voice. We're seeing that, you know, even though we are a peer for family support, we offer a lot of sessions and workshops and support groups for the consumer themselves. And this In Your Own Voice is a great program. People who are in recovery speak to businesses, schools, colleges to tell their experience. You know, I found that, you know, I can understand my daughter, but I don't really get what she goes through every day. And as much as I can empathize, again, I don't know what she's doing, you know, struggling with every day. So, you know, we found that this presentation is really powerful because I think a lot of students don't know what to do, you know, where to go if they see their friend cutting or even, you know, suicidal thoughts, what to do. Do I tell my parents? Do I tell my teacher? You know, and so this we've seen just really help a lot of other students and even, you know, like the businesses too. You know, a lot of the people were really surprised. Their coworker had bipolar and was in one of our presentations. One of the ladies in the audience actually stood up and said, you know, I have bipolar and I struggle with it. I've not told anybody at this company. I've struggled with it for 10 years. And everybody was crying, you know, saying, wow, we didn't know what was going on. Why did you not feel comfortable? And she said, because I was afraid for my job. I was afraid about how you would see if I was a good worker. And I think clearing the air and having honest, open dialogue is really the best way, you know, for us. And the other presentation I talked to Ken about. It's called Parents and Teachers as Allies. You know, you have some information about that as well. We are finding this program to be so good because we actually go to the faculty and staff, and we talk to the staff about being our eyes and ears. We're not asking them to be diagnosticians or doctors, but just, you know, observers. And coming back and being able to talk to the social worker at school or the therapist there and having, again, you know, the red flag, I see the student disappearing into the bathroom, you know, I see cut art marks, even the lunch ladies, they were, you know, we offer this to the cafeteria staff because they see the kids a lot. Some of them throw the food out, the kid's getting really skinny with the baggy clothes. You know, I had a couple of cafeteria ladies say, well, I don't even know what to do, where to go. You know, so we talk to the school about implementing certain policies on what happens in that case, whether, you know, they're supposed to report to the principal, the superintendent. And again, you know, we feel like we come in from the back end and educate the parents so that when they get a call from the counselor, they don't have the click, you know, instead is, okay, I get it. You know, I have this gut feeling. I think my daughter does have this. What can we do? And again, coming from that, you know, educational dialogue instead of being emotionally, you know, pointing fingers. You know, we have so many parents coming in blaming everybody except for themselves and being accountable and getting educated. We tell them, you know, anger doesn't belong, you know, here. We have a system. We have to work with it. It's not about blaming anybody. So, again, I'm hoping that Ken will talk about, you know, talk to the other schools, see if they want us to come in and present. It's a 90-minute presentation. There's a PowerPoint that's very easy to follow. It talks about some, you know, the signs to look for, some of the major basic illnesses like ADHD, ADD, anxiety, depression, even schizophrenia, bipolar. What's really great about that program is it's in four components. One is the presenter, who is either a teacher or a social worker who has a child that suffers from mental illness. Then there's the presenter with the PowerPoint, also a parent. And then third, the parent themselves giving a 15-minute presentation about her experience or his experience with their child in the educational system. You know, what worked, what teachers were great at recognizing, helping the child through the school system, what didn't work, what could have been done better. And then the program ends with a 15-minute presentation of the consumer themselves. And I think that's always the most compelling part because the teachers in the audience hear, you know, what stellar teachers there are. You know, what teachers made a point to go out and sit down with that child and say, you know, I haven't seen you at school for 2 weeks. What's going on? You know, if the child has anxiety, instead of making them do that assignment and do the, you know, oral presentation, they'll have them write a written presentation. Or gym, not changing in the locker room and saying, okay, I get it. You know, let's do something else. You know, for my daughter, that was the case. She had a good experience, you know, with New York State education. And we were from California. California was horrible. She had an IEP. They never implemented it. I was constantly in the class telling them. She had simple stuff, you know, sit in front of the class, extended time. They just couldn't seem to manage that. The principal actually said to me, we don't have any mediocre children here. So, you know, that was difficult to swallow. Okay. Yeah. But here in New York, I really felt that, you know, Allie immediately got in. The IEP, boom. You know, teachers were understanding. So she had a fairly good, you know, experience. So, you know, we're hoping that we can get into schools. We see, you know, increase in suicide. We see so much. We keep on hearing all the stuff at middle school now. It's frightening. Yeah. So, again, you know, I noticed that a lot of schools are focusing on substance and drug abuse. And when it comes down to it, it's really about mental health issues. It's not that. That's self-medicating. So, great. It's great that they have those programs. But I think, you know, mental health is a complicated thing. So attacking that, you know, drug and alcohol stuff, it's easier, but again, I think a lot of the social workers are recognizing we got to hit the core, you know, to fix really anything overall. So, let's see. Just briefly, we're having a ribbon campaign, so if you see these ribbons in Woodstock and Newport, we're hoping Siri B. Kingston, we just didn't have enough manpower, but these ribbons will be up for the entire month of May. We have 10 municipalities participating, a lot of mental health agencies, schools. We're having the seniors, we know that they have to do the community hours. They always leave them to the last week of graduation. So, you know, we're having the students come out, and a lot of students, teachers are actually, and principals are actually taking this campaign and implementing it in their schools to start addressing mental health. And we notice that a lot of, you know, we're doing more PTA programs. We're actually, you know, some of them are soft approach, you know, wearing, you know, green is the color for mental health. They're having the kids come, you know, in green, and they're going to, some of the health teachers are talking about basic mental health, you know, as a priority. You know, we say without, you know, mental health, there's no health. And so a lot of the teachers are kind of piggybacking off of that. So, you know, hopefully next year, you know, it was all about just tying the ribbons, and we realized how much more there was to it. So next year we're planning to do a lot more intensive stuff with the schools. You know, I wanted to thank you so much because, you know, we had our Woodstock meeting, and Jeremy Wilbur, who's the supervisor there, invited Legislator Gregorius and, you know, Chief Keefe, and then Tamara Cooper of Family. And, you know, as a result, Legislator Gregorius told me that he would reach out to Jeanette. And Jeanette walked the talk, called me, and then before you know it, I met with Ken, and I didn't realize that we were meeting with the whole entire staff, which, again, you know, we cover Dutchess and Ulster, and it's a huge region, and we haven't been really as effective as we wanted to be in Ulster County, and we see the need for it. And, you know, also Judy was just so supportive. You know, at the last two meetings, they made a commitment, you know, all the providers, to make sure that, you know, NAMI programs will be used as a referral. Our basics program will be taken off in May, because they all made a commitment to say we're going to refer at least two families. And in fact, wow, a lot of them said, you know what, we already have four families. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, this collaborative effort, you know, that we're seeing in Ulster is just extremely important for us.
Yeah, and I just want to say Greg was very supportive of inviting you and having you in contact after I spoke to you.
Really appreciate it. You know, yeah, we see, you know, people, you know, we really do see from the commissioner to everybody being so supportive and understanding the priority about mental health. Because, you know, it's not that Dutchess is not, you know, honestly, you know, they gave us an advertising grant for this year and next year, $10,000 for 2 years, because I think Dr. Glatt did see the significance that, you know, before I did all this, I said, how did you guys, you know, advertise? And they just looked at me and said, by feet. And I said, wasabi. I mean, they literally would just walk, put flyers up. I found out by it from an article in the Poughkeepsie Journal. And so, you know, I was amazed. You know, my real job, you know, was all about advertising. So I was like floored, you know. So our last campaign, it was only for Dutchess County. We had to be very creative again so we wouldn't, impinge on our grant here. They allowed us to advertise in Kingston Freeman, but we couldn't use, you know, Kingston. So we had to come up with, I think we ended up losing some sleep, but we came up with Northern Dutchess. And we actually filled the class, and people came over the river to come to Kingston, too. Mm-hmm. And that's why Chris and Mark ended up with all that. But, you know, the classes were filled before even the campaign was done.
Wow.
So, again, we see that, you know, the need for that. And, you know, we want to expand the classes out here in Kingston as well, because we hear it all the time. You know, we need the class. We need the class. You know, as Ken can tell you, too, we presented the programs. You know, again, everybody was on board. We talked about CIT training as well, and the PTA program. To end everything, is that, you know, getting into all this stuff, you know, I really realize, you know, managed care is really here to stay. You know, obviously, I mean, if you don't believe it, you know, you're going to be left behind.
Right.
And, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, I've noticed, too, that a lot of the programs now are, quote-unquote, non-traditional. But, you know, what we're trying to do is save money, you know, give the best quality to people, but, you know, the least amount of cost. And, you know, the bottom line for us is that, you know, we want to keep our loved ones in recovery, and we want to keep them safe, reducing hospital admissions and emergency department visits. We see that, you know, when we educate the family and the caretakers of our loved ones with mental illness, and working with the consumer's team of doctors, we're seeing that a lot of doctors are recognizing the fact that we need to include the support system. If we don't include the support system, forget it. We're going to see that person again in the hospital. And we see that, you know, our families that are taking both the classes really are keeping down those visits. You know, for me, Allie has not been in the hospital for 2 years. Again, I was 2 years ago, it was every 3 weeks. Joanne's son, who's, our program director, her son has not been in the hospital for 4 years. You know, down the line, we keep track of our family members, you know, that have graduated from family, and, you know, keep tabs. And, again, they, hands down, it's been pretty low. Joanne showed me one of her bills. It came to $32,000. So, you know, as I mentioned to Ken, you know, at our meeting, you know, we would appreciate if, you know, Ulster would consider looking into an advertising grant for NAMI. You know, I think that you know, between the cost of my daughter and Joanne's son, you look at overall, you know, it would be worth it to do a grant. And also, you know, perhaps, you know, we're looking into Dutchess too, having some operating costs for us as well, so that, you know, we can become a part of this infrastructure. Because, you know, we are really dedicated, you know, our board of directors, you know, we're having actually NAMI New York State come to see how we can restructure our organization so it can provide the services for both Dutchess and Ulster. And, you know, I just want to share on a personal level, you know, my daughter writes for the Poughkeepsie Journal, and she writes a lot about, you know, poetry and everything, but she decided to come out with her article about her mental illness because she felt that it was really important to have her illness no longer control her, that, you know, she was going to take the driver's seat. And that's why I do what I do, because wow. I see it works. You know, I think that, you know, with NAMI, it's not, again, we don't try to sell NAMI programs. It's about helping. You know, we have always a resource list available to family. And, you know, again, she may relapse, but you know what? I'm confident. Wow. I know I have a relapse plan. She knows that she has a huge buffer system, you know, mm-hmm. with people that she's met in NAMI, her doctors. We have an understanding.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're hoping that this committee, you know, supports NAMI programs and puts in a good word for us. Mm-hmm. You know, when it's time to get down to the bucks, you know, that we can continue what we want to do. Because, you know, as you all know, being in a volunteer group, it's hard.
Yeah.
There's no accountability sometimes, you know. It's like you can't show up, you know, and you're like, really? You know, but again, you know, our commitment's there, but the follow through sometimes is perhaps not there. So, again, you know, a lot of NAMIs do have a part-time staff or some sort of staff. You know, for us, we would love to be able to man our phones, you know, a business day. But right now, you know, we only have a voice machine and we check it every 2 days. You know, I would really like to have more. We were, you know, Joanne and I were sitting down seeing how we can expand our programs. We would love to double that because there's a necessity for that. You know, like our SSI workshop, we would have loved to be able to accommodate all those people because what we found is, you know, even though we squished in, you know, 80 people in this room, it proved exponentially because these social workers were so happy to come out with so much, you know, knowledge. And again, you know, we'd like to do that. We'd like to have more talks during the week. But, you know, if you look over at that, NAMI has so many programs that we would like to adopt. It's just, you know, the money issue and also some of the manpower. But I think, you know, it takes time. You know, we're seeing such an increase in, you know, the programs out here, the necessity. But we do appreciate, you know, the support from Ulster. It's just, you know, the last few months have been just incredible. And you know, we do see it working. I think, you know, again, because Judy has been so instrumental, everybody, you know, taking the time and understanding. And because I think, you know, we are peer-to-peer, that has Well, I had, you know, one family say to me, you know, this 23-year-old counselor said to her, you know, you need to change up the way you're speaking to your kid. And you know, the family member asked the woman, you know, do you have kids? And the woman said, no. And, you know, I don't really think I want that. And so, again, you know, and it was interesting because she came to class and talked to us about this. And we asked her, what did the therapist say? And the therapist, you know, said the blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we actually agreed with what the therapist said. And the family member said, oh, really? Yeah, and she did it. She did the following week. She said, you know, I tried it. It actually worked. You know, but, and so we're seeing that, you know, again, you can tell your kids something, they might not listen. You know, but when you have the peer-to-peer,
absolutely,
it really is more effective.
It works.
So thank you very much. Yes.
It works.
You have a question.
Sure.
Did you meet with the health commissioner also? Would she be involved in this?
Yeah, it was a really good meeting. Again, you know, we didn't know who was coming, and also, you know, we're really happy to be able to speak to her. And again, you know, it's obvious that where her heart is. And, you know, again, the way she structures, the way the team works so well together, you know, the openness, you know, the communication's there. And, you know, it's, you know, with Dutchess, you know, I know that they're kind of, you know, Kevin was saying that they're kind of collaborating so that it will be similar to Ulster. It'll take some time, you know, obviously, because people are used to doing certain things. But, you know, here we really thought, wow, it's a fine, you know, the machinery there, it's working, you know, and, you know, everybody on board.
I got another question. A lot of resources with the Mental Health Association of Ulster County. I mean, have you reached out to them?
We have started. And so, again, because, you know, we have a sort of a change around right now, so people have been in it have left. And it's kind of hard. You know, Ulster did have a NAMI at one point, but the group that does our support group here, at actually MAJ, they decided they really didn't want to do everything, the outreach, and they just wanted to hold a support group, which, you know, we were fine with. And Barry Campbell actually decided to take on Ulster, and you know, we decided to merge with them. So again, it's kind of new, and we've got to feel out things. But what we're seeing is that Ulster is very receptive. You know, so it just takes the manpower a little bit, the dialogue, getting things going. And I do see that happening. So again, you know, having our programs, the way we recruit our teachers is through taking the class and making sure that that person is able to emotionally, you know, and timely, you know, be able to commit themselves to the class. So, you know, again, it's that cycle, you know, trying to get the classes and then being able to recruit a teacher. But you know, we do see that happening. So, you know, I'm very enthusiastic about it. We left, you know, that day thinking, okay, you know,
I'm glad you had that opportunity. Oh, I had suggested first that she contact Ken, because I certainly wasn't going to be able to tell her every little single program and what they did. And so
it really was.
I wanted
great.
To make sure you're aware of what the county does.
Oh, I'm impressed. I mean, honestly, I think, again, it works, you know, and it's really the focus, the mission's there, you know, and mm-hmm. it's working. So, you know, again, very hopeful, you know, for us. But so we're hoping, you know, that there will be more of NAMI and Ulster, mm-hmm. basically. Yeah. So, but thank you.
More. Great, sure. Just like that one, just importantly to our, you know, Tina as a group, we had a wonderful meeting just several days ago. We pulled together all of our managers, so they not only met with the commissioner and the deputy commissioner, but also the program directors mm-hmm. that work both with our children's side of the shop and also the adult side of the shop all too. So there's a lot of good dialogue. There's a lot of, you know, the mental health system in New York City is very fragile.
Yes.
And it's really a world of have and have nots, mm-hmm. you know. Right now the state is closing psychiatric beds in state psychiatric hospitals across the state, and the goal is to reinvest those funds into community-based programming like the services that NAMI provides. And mm-hmm. To read in the paper, you know, a state budget that was adopted today, and I'll be honest with you, I'm disgusted. You know, we've worked for months. There was a pool of about $25 million of reinvestment dollars that were going to be made available statewide. Roughly, you know, $6 million per region was kind of how it was broken down. And we've been working at developing plans, and we learned today that through some political expediency, that $3.5 million of that pool was taken off the top and given to Dutchess County so they could eliminate their energy taxes.
Oh, God, isn't that where that money came from?
Yeah, and it's disappointing.
Again,
it's very disappointing.
Because
dollars
that
were supposed to be earmarked for community-based services such as those provided by NAMI are going to go to tax relief for the residents of Dutchess County.
That's so unfair.
It really is.
Again, so, you know, I'm disgusted by it, but we're going to move forward. There will be some residual dollars left over. Mm-hmm. There's immense need. Mm-hmm. You know, we're the only county in the region where the state does not fund a mobile crisis team. And it's something that's been a priority of all of ours for several years. And it's our hope to put together a plan where when a parent is in crisis at 11 o'clock at night with their, you know, with their daughter locked mm-hmm. in the bathroom and the mm-hmm. father trying to beat the door down and the mother on the phone, mm-hmm. that the only answer is in a trip to Kingston Hospital. Mm-hmm. There needs to be a step where there are professionals that will respond. Will there be, you know, a de-escalation of the conflict where mm-hmm. a prescriber will be able to address medication needs?
Mm-hmm. That's what struck me about Tina when we talked about her program, much a need there is.
We get it, but the system is so fragile. And it's our hope to really, you know, help fill some of the gaps. You know, we leverage our state aid very well. There's a lot of county money in the mix. In all honesty, a lot of the county money is used to support the outpatient clinics. I mean, because really, that's a need that, you know, that's a difference between, you know, people in the hospital or people in the county jail. And again, but it's really the family side of this, the peer support side of this is very important. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, where there's been a lot of conversation about
better collaboration with the schools. It's something that I personally spent a lot of time in over the last year. And you know, there might be a lot of opportunity for us to work with NAMI in the future. But again,
that'd be great.
Again, it's dollars. I'm a little disappointed because you know the best laid plans of mice and men. You know, again, we worked very hard. We had a really great package put together to respond to the $8. But
it's not even fair to pick one county and say, here, we're going to help you so you don't have to raise that tax. I mean,
again,
if we had known that, we would have done that.
Political expediency, and you know, they have state legislators advocating for them.
Yeah.
They have a little bit more juice.
They must
have
had
a different priorities.
A lot of balance.
So,
that's just
again, but every dollar that's spent comes at
a
cost. Yeah. And I'm concerned that the cost here it further degrades a very fragile mental health system. And again, there'll be a lot of conversation about, look what Dutchess County got over the next several days. And I want all of you to know that it's a chance for you to weigh in as well, that, you know, at what expense or at what price.
Well, I know Senator Gibson.
What tax were they eliminating with that?
It's part of the county budget.
They
put a county sales tax on home energy.
We had that years ago, and they took
the position that, you know, unless there's state dollars, we'll have to keep this tax. So this is one of the pots that was raided. To take care of this.
Was on a press today.
Ken, when you say that there's a that we're the only county in a region that doesn't have the mobile service unit for mental health.
Yes.
What's the region? I'm just curious.
Dutchess, Orange, Sullivan. The center of that cluster.
We have one.
So
but
you get the rural counties like Green. Right. They're not in the mix because it's too far in the boonies.
We have a population center here in Kingston, Saugerties in particular.
Yeah.
These teams would be very, very valuable resource for the community. And again, we're going to work. You know what? It's going to take us a little longer, but we'll get there. But again, it's really disappointing to know that dollars from the closure of these state psychiatric hospitals were available, and now
there's no accountability.
Those funds have been raided for other purposes.
We've actually had that initiative at NAMI, talking to legislators, saying, you know, we agreed it's supposed to be reinvested. Where is this money now? And the answer that we got was that was last year's budget. What was that supposed to mean? Where is that money? And there's no answer. There's no accountability for that. You know, it was agreed upon, like you said, reinvestment. There's no answer. So, you know, I know, you know, we work with Senator Gibson, and he sent out an email, too, about this energy thing, you know, thing, too. And, you know, again, I think, you know, we do see a change, though, I think, in society in general about acknowledging mental health as a priority now. I think people are realizing, you know, mental health, it needs to be a standalone issue. Every time we have an issue like Sandy Hook, you know, or anything with shootings, you know, it always ends up with gun control. You know, we don't mix diabetes with gun control. We don't mix breast cancer with gun control. Why would we do that with mental health issues? Mm-hmm. But again, I think it's because it's convenient. It's easy to piggyback on that.
Yeah.
You know, it's duct tape method, you know. So again, I think, you know, the public is really acknowledging that, saying, you know, we don't want to hear that. You know, it needs to be by itself, you know, and we do see, I think, the new generation too, the physicians, the even the 20-30, the stigma's not as much there. They really are being educated about mental health. They understand that even though their friend has bipolar, you know, their friend is not afraid to take meds in front of them. You know, if they have her having a manic episode, it's not like, I'm not going to be your friend anymore. We are seeing a turn, you know, but it's just getting the rest, like Ken was saying, the system to follow.
And we can be very proud here in this county that we combined public health and mental health. We have
a
singular commissioner that represents both sides of that equation. You know, the administrative team is the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, when Tina met with our senior managers, they represented both sides of that shop. And again, those collaborations really help us stretch the dollar, but also you get a much better product. So I noted that Dutchess County is going in that direction now. That's one of their plans that they're currently talking about.
Absolutely.
So really, in my mind, really not only makes the point, but it delivers on this notion that, you know, mental illness is part of the public health equation.
Of course, of course. I mean, you look at the statistics, you know, 1 in 4 Americans, 1 in 5 kids, you know, yeah, that's frightening in a way, but, you know, it's the reality of it, you know, and you can't
So when you say consumer, you're talking about the adolescent.
Yeah, the person that has mental illness. Although that terminology, I know, for instance, we work with peoples, they're changing over. They like to be noted as peer. But, that's kind of confusing, too, because, we're peer, but we aren't the ones that have the mental illness. Mm-hmm. But, I think politically correct, they are seeming to go toward, they want to be the peer advocate, so... Again.
So you're working mostly with adolescents, though, as the consumer, and then parents and groups,
but also anybody with mental illness. Yeah,
well, anybody.
So basically, it's the support, the caretakers, the family.
Family, right.
That's what we focus on. However, of course, we get a lot of people taking the class. They themselves have mental illness, and they found it very helpful because they also add a lot to that class. Because for me, I didn't really get the fact that when my daughter had a manic episode, why the next day she had to sleep 16 hours. And one of the ladies who has schizoaffective said, because when you go through that episode, you are so exhausted.
Yeah,
your entire body, it's like you've gone through war. You have to be able to recuperate the next day. And again, I always would be like, get over it. You have everything. You've got...
Yeah.
Money for school, you're beautiful, you got a boyfriend,
yeah.
Snap out of it. I mean, I absolutely said that. And I even said to my daughter at one point when she had some OCD, she has OCD issues, we don't have time for this. I actually said that to her. And
it's incredible.
Looking back on it, that made it worse. And so, having Luann in the class, it really was really an asset because it gave me an insight. She's so articulate about her illness. She manages it quite well. She teaches. She's at a library. She works at the library. She's engaged. She has a life, and it was good to see also, having an example of that, that it works. Because she has the support system, she has the right meds, the talk therapy. As a package, it keeps her in recovery. And so, again, I found it very helpful to have her in the class, and also expanding on, we're trying to have a peer-to-peer group too, which is actually the family-to-family, but with the consumers teaching it, and the participants are actual people with mental health issues, keeping them in recovery. So, trying to expand on that, on having a good balance as well, but we do focus, on the family support system.
Right.
So, because it's a lot.
So what are you hoping to see from the county?
Well, I think possibly, for instance, like an advertising grant, because right now we only have for Dutchess, and, Ulster people are saying, well, what about us? And, we said, well, we got to word it very carefully. We don't want to jeopardize our grant, with Dutchess
from
County.
Dutchess,
exactly.
Right.
Which is fair. I mean, it's for Dutchess. We tried to explain we can't do it for Ulster, but we were creative and was able to get that. So some grant money. We actually are looking toward getting paid staff, to have, two full-time and two part-time. Because, manning the phones, just the little things, emailing, it's hard for our program director, and I, to do things in the community when there's just administrative work that has to be done. Getting more programs out there, for us to be able to continue and expand our programs. So basically, some budget money, for advertising operating systems, to get us in a more stable, because again, having volunteers is great, but when it comes at the end of the day, when things have to be done, and in your regular job, if you don't do it, you don't get paid, and there's some things that are really crucial that need to be done to have these programs, solid, concrete, and best quality for Ulster and Dutchess. There has to be, some, because, right now, for instance, everything comes out of our pocket, so, Xeroxing, doing anything, I'm amazed, we have a webmaster, she lives in New Jersey, she's a friend of mine, she's a teacher too, and she dedicates her weekends to doing our website, Facebook, and even our advertising, in the past, we literally, some of the teachers they had a allocation at school, they would Xerox and then put the flyers in the kids' envelopes. And that's how we got a lot of parents coming
to be creative.
We do. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have even Mount St. Mary's, a couple of our members, they're taking class. They get a stipend every month. And Lisa, for instance, doesn't use her stipend. So she has $50 there every semester.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I email her stuff, and then I see her at the gym, and she gives her to me. You know? So, you know, again, we have to, I'm really impressed. We are, you know, we have been creative, like ShopRite, too. Mm-hmm. They're sponsoring part our walk. You know, Tina Walker, again, sees a need. She wants to be out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she put some money in for, you know, she was able to, she talked to corporate about what we do, was mm-hmm. able to, you know, get some money for us. So, but, you know, being creative takes a lot of time, too, you know, mm-hmm. and
we have a question right behind
you. I'm Lee King, I'm the League of Women Voters, and I cover these meetings for our commentator.
Yes.
Do I understand you correctly that mm-hmm. as far as money is concerned,
mm-hmm.
you are you have volunteers, therefore they don't get paid?
Right.
Do you and your director get paid?
No.
No.
You
have other sources of income for yourself.
Well, actually, for me right now, you know, I stopped working because my daughter was in such a bad state. I decided to focus on her. I have to go back to work fairly soon. So, you know, again, you know, I'm doing as much as we can, but we do not have any paid staff.
But you are dependent upon other people to provide you with the necessary services. Do you have anybody who goes out and fundraises for you?
We try.
Any organization?
No, we do not. So we have a walk every month, you know, every year we have an awareness walk. That is sort of our big fundraiser.
Okay.
But again, I've done a lot of volunteer work, and you know, I'm amazed that you know their big fundraiser raises about $3,000.
Okay.
And so you know, I actually did a Zumba event, and we brought in $3,700, and I didn't realize at the time, you know, how happy they were, because I thought we didn't really do. I mean, we did okay. It was, you know, sort of.
Oh,
a 2 month.
Yeah.
Well, we've thought of it in 2 months. You know, what happened was, you know, Juby, who's an instructor, she works at Gold's Gym. She has a friend that she's known for 7 years. The woman suffered from bipolar. She committed suicide, left behind two children. And Juby was really upset that she didn't even know this woman had bipolar. She you know, they went out. They spent Christmas together. They never once. Everybody at Gold's Gym, too, the management, the owners, were shocked. They were like, that morning she went out for a run, came back, overdosed. She had her sneakers on. You know, everybody was, what's going on? But, you know, she was starting a new job. She canceled a lot of appointments. Everybody thought, oh, she's just starting a new job. You know, mm-hmm. in hindsight, I think if people knew, that would have been a red flag. And so, you know, Juby said to me, what is going on? And so that's when she started getting involved with NAMI. You know, she knew. You know, a lot of us go there to de-stress, and it was amazing when she started talking to everybody how many people had children with mental illness, husbands with, you know, spouses.
Yes.
And all our clients, she's like, she would come up to me every day and say, my God, you know, that woman I train, her son has, you know, schizophrenia. She told me, you know, I told her I was doing this thing with NAMI. The woman's like, oh, my God.
So, you know, one of...
Have either you or your director made any attempt to contact the New York State Grants Awards and
written
a grant?
That's our next step, because I think, you know, again,
you need to do that.
That's where we're starting to follow through.
You may have to do that.
Yeah.
I think we have to do that. That's what I'm pushing for.
Contact Cahill's office and ask them to give you the necessary information to contact the grant writing portion of the state.
Sure. Okay. Now, who
do we have?
Cahill. Cahill. Okay.
Yeah, we have that.
Okay.
If you have a different assemblyman, or Mr. Crennel can
Something. Sure.
You know, one other suggestion I might have for you, because it's an incredible presentation you made. I would make that to every service club in Ulster County. There's quite a few of them, you know.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
And they
have been.
They do
that's
different.
True.
Like Kiwanis.
Okay,
Kiwanis,
yeah, that's true.
Rotary, Lions.
Lions, Rotary.
Mm-hmm.
And they, even the Junior League, because they do fundraising, and then they'll pick somebody, you know, program they might want to support for that particular year.
Right.
I mean, that might be a good...
That's a good idea.
You know.
Contact the Ulster County Chamber of Commerce.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know that they can help you because that's a business organization.
Well, actually, you know, we belong to the Dutchess, county chamber too, and you know they've been helpful. You know, coming in, networking and stuff. But you know, we do want to. Again, that was. You know what the problem is now that I'm seeing is that, you know, I come from a business background, and I've noticed NAMI is very grassroots. they want to maintain that identity. And it's hard to push an organization to a different level when you're talking about all these programs, you know, how effective we want to be. And some affiliates have, like NAMI Metro New York City, their budget is just incredible. They just ran a campaign. In fact, you know, the agency I used to work at was doing the hair and makeup for that. They made $300,000, okay, in 2 months. They have paid staff. You know, in fact, the judge, the family court judge right there now in foster care system, 10 families took the NAMI Basics class, and they all got their kids back. And the judge took the NAMI Basics class very seriously. You know, he said, if you take this, you come back, let me talk to you, let's see how you're doing. They all, the kids all came back to the families. So, you know, that kind of thing is what we are looking at for Dutchess and Ulster, too, that it's something in there to give parents some skills. So, you know, right now, like I said, we're having the big head honchos from NAMI New York State come and speak to us about where, you know, they are seeing, you know, the growth that we are undergoing, and they want to have it controlled, but also in an effective way, you know, beneficiary for everybody. But, you know, we are hearing, okay, grassroots, I understand the grassroots. I think that's extremely important. But, again, like you said, you know, we have to have some sort of structure, too. You know, we can't keep going the way we are because we're not going to get anywhere, right? So, I thank you for the suggestion.
Yeah,
I mean, honestly, you know, we are looking, but...
You should also contact, you know, like the radio media. They do public service announcements.
Yes. In fact, for May, this, you know, we're doing a lot of PSAs.
They do some. I'm on the Regional Special Olympics Committee, and they do some for us.
Oh, really?
And when we do our Polar Plunge, in one day we make
$150,000. Yeah, definitely. You know, when I bring back figures, you know, like suicide prevention, you know, Smith Grease House, you know, it's all ASTRA. You know, why are we not doing that? Why are we not pulling those?
I will tell you, before, you know, some people had gotten involved, they were averaging $30,000 to $40,000 a year.
I'll take that.
within the past three and a half, four years, we've ramped it up to $150,000.
Wow.
Kudos to you.
That's a great idea.
What? Yes.
I'll talk to you later if you're available.
Okay.
My friend and I do WGHQ, our local radio station, it's from 7 and 9, but we usually have an opening from 8 to 8:30. I'm kind of early.
Yeah.
In the morning?
Sure.
If you have any, you know, if you can't make it, if you have somebody you might want to come and just let me know.
I'll call you.
Think about it.
That's perfect.
Yeah, think about it.
I mean, like I said, you know, we're doing well, but I think we could do better, you know. we're having growth, huge growth pains right now. So I think it's just a matter of time and proper management that we get in a good place. So, you know, again, our slogan is Find Hope, Find Hope. And I tell everybody on our board of directors, too, you know, we got to keep that hope, keep going, keep plowing away, you know. And, you know, again, right now, you know, we're just very grateful to have, you know, be able to speak to everybody and, you know, talk about, you know, what we do. And having such positive results and responses, it's good, you know, it's awesome. But I really do.
Thank you so much.
Of course.
Your not-for-profit status right now?
Yes.
Okay. There's like mental health grants through the Department of Health.
Oh, really?
Federal grants.
Okay.
That they're on the website. Like,
I should look. Okay.
For, you know, if you conduct a study in conjunction with the work that you do, and they're literally just they're reoccurring grants that are in the federal budget, and you can find them on the internet.
Okay.
When I was in graduate school, I was thinking of doing a grant like to study childhood bullying, and there's quite a lot of liberality. Mm-hmm. Generality in the topics that can be chosen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading through during your presentation. I skimmed through this paper.
Yes.
And I was kind of curious, with a paper like this, if a qualitative methodology maybe would have been better suited.
I agree.
Keep the anonymity of the participants, would be an issue. But just because a lot of people, you know, may not have like you know, graduate level statistical research methods under their belt.
Right.
And when you're trying to reach out to you know, the general populace, like it's a paper like this, you're kind of sterilizing
right,
the impact of
right.
what you're trying to do when you're just
exactly.
minimizing it down into numbers
right.
and
I agree.
Standard
when I,
deviation.
But if you, it's interesting because if you look who was on the panel, I can see. I mean, their approach is typical. Like, what does it do?
So
you know,
we didn't have time to look
yeah.
through that.
But, yeah. Well, but you know, I do agree. But you know, when I pulled it out, I was a little bit like, oh, okay, it was what it was. But I again, you know, it's written. Terry Brister is actually the curriculum writer for NAMI Basics. So, you know, you have what NYU Duke. You know, my sister is actually graduated from Duke. I think, you know, when I look at her research papers, it's typically set up like that with
yeah.
a lot of the numbers as opposed to, you know, like you said, qualitative approach, which would be better, I think, suited for somebody looking at a grant. They would be able to
yeah,
relate
just
to it better.
Yeah.
When it said in here, I think something like 9 caregivers were the only ones that responded to all the pre-test, the post-test, and the 3-month follow-up.
Well,
so
we
it's
don't
like
even know what you're looking at because none of us had an opportunity.
No, no, what I'm
I don't know. What
oh, that's the study.
Yeah,
well,
no, the study was in your
practice. By Terry Brister, who
yeah.
wrote the program.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. No, I'm just saying, like,
no,
a
not me.
No, like a qualitative study, if there's only 9 people that responded in the full tier, that it could have been, they
right.
could have just written, you know. It was,
right, what they wanted. Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing is,
like
NAMI,
a narrative type.
NAMI Basics is sort of new too, so I think that's kind of what they started. Like for us, this was our first class that we held, you know, recently. And you know, the Ulster will have the second class in May. So I'm not sure that they had enough, you know. And I noticed that, you know, when she wrote the curriculum, you know, it's how do I say it? You know, it could have been. I don't know. When I teach it, I kind of change some of it so that the audience can better understand. Because for instance, like the validation, it's like 3 paragraphs worth of. She should have just said validate.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was like, what is she actually trying to say here? You know, I tell parents, validate 3 times. I guarantee you it'll de-escalate, you know. But the way she has it written, it's kind of hard to follow, you know. So it's again, I think, you know, when we're taught at this workshop, you know, to follow the script, you know, Joanne and I reinterpret it for the parents. And
right.
I think it's worth better because, you know, again, I think she's, you know, this woman's very smart, very academic.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff is really, you know, useful. But again, I think it's lost in translation sometimes between she forgets who the audience is. And I didn't have enough time to see what her background is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she has a lot of, you know, education behind her. But I think perhaps, I don't know, you know, the way that it's very academic for her as opposed to being effective, you know. So in class, we kind of, I hate to say dumb it down, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, parents just want to know. They don't want to know. You know?
Yeah, for your purpose.
Right.
Right.
For us.
For
yeah,
you.
Exactly.
They could probably
do
something like this and get some money out of it, though, through the federal grants because
I'll look
of,
into
like,
that.
To do like a follow up study or a different paper, but, you know, the same type of subject matter.
I agree.
Where,
but again, you know, I just finished taking a grant class and, you know, there's money out there. I think, you know, we need to go toward that direction again. But I think, you know, our board, I think they're just so stunned at how much, you know, we have another board meeting. I'm always afraid to go and report because we're so
bad,
you know.
Yeah.
So, again, like, this
well,
is exciting
one step
for us.
At a time.
Well, I think, you know, coming back,
can't do it all.
It's exciting for them. They'll hear, wow, you know, here we are. Things
we'll
are
definitely
going.
Be behind, you know, everything that we can possibly do. And I want to thank you.
Thank you for
know,
having me.
For coming
perfect.
Here. I want to thank you as well for sharing, you know, your personal story and struggle.
Well,
you
know,
I think it puts a human face on really the struggles that people go through.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and again, my story, I think, is, I don't want to say atypical, but you hear other families too. It's so inspirational,
sure.
you know, that you do not give up. And and the things that they've gone through, I mean, literally, the first class I went to, Joanne can tell you, I probably cried for the first 2 classes. I was just, it was so
overwhelming.
But then when I started listening to every other family, you know, I thought, you know what? Mine's like a cakewalk. You know, like seriously, you know, these parents were talking about the Swiss cheese walls. I'm thinking, what are they talking about? Well, I think the 4th time I was at class, my daughter came home and literally kicked 3 holes in the wall in like 15 seconds. And I thought, okay, guess what? I'm a member now too. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, just having that, you know, not being able to expect that, okay. But again, you know, we say, you know, everybody in the class at the end said, you know, we don't have any holes in the wall anymore, you know, right. And yeah, it's progress. It's progress, right? So thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yes, you want this right for good? Yes. Yep.
You want to take those and keep
dispersed, or what do you think?
I would like one.
Okay,
here,
yeah,
absolutely. In a minute.
Oh, you got it. Okay, there.
Great,
yeah,
thank you.
Okay. I don't know. Do you want these to
probably
to give some? Yeah,
yeah.
I don't want to just have them around. If you can
help.
All right, very good.
Thank you so much.
We'll be in touch. The committee will, you know, we'll have a discussion, and we know where to get all of you.
Thanks again, Jeanette.
Okay.
We'll listen to you on the radio on Friday.
Oh, there you go.
Maybe.
Next Friday.
Hopefully I won't get walked in.
I'll give you a call just to see if you're just somebody available. Don't worry about it.
Thank you so much.
It's early.
Take care, okay? Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we'll move on to resolutions.
Yeah, that was really
That was incredible. Yeah, very involved. All right, so we'll move to resolution 131. This is approving execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county for Cornell Cooperative Extension and the Department of Social Services. Somebody can move for discussion?
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Okay. Very well. Basically what this is, I was hoping Ken was going to stick around here to maybe provide some details, but it's a partnership between Cornell Cooperative and the federal SNAP program, and basically it's education on people who are receiving public benefits to try to help them eat in a more nutritious way.
Right.
You know, it's 100% federally funded. I think it's a little over $100,000. And I personally think it's a good program. You know, if people are receiving those benefits, I like to. You know, I'd rather see people purchasing fruits and vegetables than Hot Pockets and you know, melon.
Yeah, teach them how to shop. That's basic.
Absolutely, and I think that speaks to, you know, basic life skills as well. You know, you go out and you know how to, you know, the proper things to buy, and there's a trickle down effect as well because you know you're healthier. You know, you're with all the heart disease and the diabetes and everything that's rampant out there as a result of, you know, not eating well, I think, you know, in my opinion, this it's a great program. And it's 100% federal funded, which we like federal
funding. Makes you better,
So if there's any discussion?
I think it's a great program. I know, because I see in the schools, kids sometimes... The only meal, really nutritious meal, if you want to call it that they get is a school lunch.
Sure.
Whether it's a free or reduced type of thing. And these days it is hard to eat good. I mean, even just if you're not economically challenged, it's just hard to eat good.
Well, you have to buy fresh food. I think the government's trying to change some of those school lunches because they weren't healthy.
No.
You know, and like you said, that was the only, that was probably basically the only food they were getting.
Yeah, some kids, you could see that was their, you know, that was their staple. And now schools offer breakfast too.
Sure.
Breakfast and lunch. And for free and reduced kids also.
And you got to think of families, how they often eat on the fly because their children are in, you know, playing sports and they have band practice and guitar lessons.
That's what I was getting to. It's hard even just
much.
Right.
A lot of stuff to cook fresh sometimes.
Yeah.
But try.
Definitely.
And hopefully the fruits and vegetables will come from the Hudson Valley and keep our money in the
absolutely. Well, this isn't going to give them food. I don't think it's education.
It's education.
Yeah.
When they're going to go out and buy it, they'll buy hopefully local fresh.
Teach them how to shop.
And if anybody can help implement this program, it's definitely Cornell Cooperative.
Oh, yeah.
They've
been doing it for years.
It's amazing that they'll have an answer for any question. You can ask them about the DEP or how to grow your tomatoes. And Lee Reddy, she's good. She's really good at what she does.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Well, that said, call a vote?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Aye.
All right. Okay, good. Carrie. Yeah.
131?
Oh, there you go. Yep. All right, we'll move on to the next resolution. It's 132, and that's confirming a reappointment to the Ulster County Board of Health. motion to discuss.
I'll discuss it. Motion second. To discuss.
Okay. All right. I'm not familiar with this appointment, and that's another reason I would have liked to maybe Ken to be here to talk a little about who it is. I don't know if anybody here.
Well, I don't know the individual, mm-hmm. but it is a reappointment, and I did say to Ken, because he was here earlier, about a resume or something, mm-hmm. and he thought maybe it went to the clerk's office. So either way, Nettie, if we could find out if they don't have it, if you let us know, because then you could ask the executive's office to make sure when we vote on it.
They're not sitting on another committee.
In April, in April that we have a resume.
Okay.
Attached, absolutely. Maybe you can comment, make that to Vicky, if you don't mind my saying.
Yeah.
We always had, whether they're appointments or reappointments, the resume was behind the resolution.
And I think that's important. Yeah, you don't want to.
Now, she might have that. Vicky might have all that information.
Well, we have the appointment letter, but I don't think the resume. I don't know, but I'll ask. I'll copy everybody if we have.
Okay. Well, I know in the charter it's got like a staggered 1 year, two members will hold the office for 1 year, 2 members for 2 years, 1 member. 3, 1 member, 4, and 1 member, 5. I just wonder which appointment was this when they started, because it's a reappointment.
Well, so from present, which must be
through
2018.
So it's the four-year term.
Yeah, so it's a 4-year term.
Now, is there a statute of limitation on this, since it county executive is already reappointed, so if we don't do this in 30 days, automatically gets it?
Probably this would actually be the 5-year term.
Why would you say 5 years?
Well, because it probably started on the 1st, so we're just getting to vote on it for now.
Well, it says present, so I don't know.
Yeah, present, so maybe that was January 1st, 2014, so 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, so this would be the 5-year term. This would be the 1 member for the 5-year.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. I always look at there are the executive's appointments.
Sure.
And basically, you know.
Yeah, it would be good to have that. It's just a resume. But I'm sure we must have seen a resume for the first appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's a medical doctor. I mean, I've never went to her. So, I mean, I think it's a good appointment to have, certainly on the Board of Health, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless there's been some
disbarment.
Yeah,
we're not going to have a protest or something.
Between now and 2018, a lot could change too.
What a mess
in
that.
Hierarchy in government and things of that nature. So.
All right. So any more discussion?
No.
I guess we'll note that for the future. We'll definitely get the resume included. Okay, I'll call the vote.
Aye.
Very good. Passed. All right. Now, move on to Resolution 133, and that's authorizing the chairman of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a lease with Willie Lake LLC for space to be used as the Coordinated Children's Service Mental Health Clinic, Department of Public Works.
I'll make a motion to bring that forward.
Okay.
Second what?
Yeah.
The motion to bring it
forward. Oh, okay. We got a second on that?
Yeah.
All right. It's my understanding that this is part of the Nexus program, and there was a satellite location in New Paltz that's no longer available.
Right.
So we have another place that's in Highland.
Mm-hmm.
It's also my understanding that it's a fairly good deal. I spoke to Erica about it. It's 1,100 square foot area at about $13 a square foot, which puts it, I don't know, a little over $14,000 annually. It's for a 5-year mm-hmm. lease. And in that lease, we the county can can terminate that. Back out of the contract at any point.
60 day, yeah.
The 60 day with 60 day notice. It's also a shared funding with, I think it's 62, 6238, and that adds up to 100, right? Yeah.
Yep.
62 state monies and the 38 county money. So, and it's and the reimbursements I think are on the back of the of the resolution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The first 3 years it's at 14,300. Then it ramps up 14,575
right.
for the fourth year.
Fifth year it's like 14,850. Right. Correct.
For the fifth year.
Mm-hmm. I got a question, but Ken probably could answer it. Maybe you could. The Children's Coordinated Services, I always think of that as one part of it would be like, because it's a social service, like child protection services. So I know that we privatized our children's services to Hudson Valley Mental Health. And I thought I thought that that was farmed out. But I know that you couldn't do the child protection part of it because that would probably have to be a county agency. So
Says in, if you look at the second whereas, it really explains what they do. They provide intervention and treatment for families whose children are at risk of placement in therapeutic foster care, psychiatric hospitalization, or residential treatment facilities in an effort to keep the child safely in a home and avoid costly out-of-home placement.
They'd rather place them with foster parents
we're leasing this space for us, for our purposes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. And the landlord.
And we're only
paying
38% of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And the landlord, I believe, is responsible for both the taxes and the insurance. So.
Cool.
I remember where that satellite office was on.
Pass up.
It's a really good deal.
Wasn't on
299 next to that deli.
That's right.
Because they used to go to the deli.
Yeah.
People would park in front of the deli, and they'd get upset about.
Yep.
Clients parking in front of the deli.
Yeah, they were there quite a while.
It's probably better that they moved, yeah.
Okay.
It's like a storefront.
Any other discussion?
I did ask Ken when I went through this about comparing it to the lease we had in New Paltz, and he said it was comparable.
Yes, that's my understanding. Okay, good. Call vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Good. Carry. All right. All right. Now, we'll move on to new business.
Yeah, I have, it just came to my mind.
Sure.
And I haven't been asked to do this, but I would like the committee to have a discussion with this.
Mm-hmm.
And then having Ken here. Sometimes, when it's really not necessary. I mean, he does work full time. He's here all day. Mm-hmm. So I would like to just make a recommendation or a suggestion, or if somebody else has another idea, that when we have resolutions, if we have questions on them, to just, he has an email address, unless it's something that we need to explain. What I would love to do with this committee, because I haven't done it in years. I used to be on social services for a long, long time.
Sure.
And we've always had the departments come in, explain what they do, we did tours of the place.
Sure,
I'd love to do that with the mental health facility at Golden. I haven't seen it since they've renovated, and because we still have staff up there. Yeah, I'd love to be able to do that kind of stuff.
You're taking my new business.
Oh,
you go.
Great minds think alike.
That's it.
But I'm saying, as far as Ken, unless it's something that we really, that's a complex issue, and we got a problem with, I think just sending him an email, if any one of us have questions, and then sharing them with the committee, he might have a different question than I have. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I have called him in the past, before.
He's very receptive to it.
Yeah,
I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's good. Yeah.
We'll give Ken a pass. You can go home.
Yeah, well,
he already went home.
I mean, he is open, and I, you know, and he is. He's really knowledgeable on all this stuff.
Yeah.
And, but I would love to get, like, when Tina called, I really could not share with her what all our services were. I'm right. A little bit totally confused.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what we do that? Well, I think we do that. But I said, look, why don't you set up a meeting with Ken Cornell before you come to our committee so you're really knowledgeable about what the county offers and how you might fit into that. So I really, she gave an incredible presentation. It was very moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you mm-hmm. when you're fortunate, you know, not to have to have those problems. And it was so honest of her to say that's probably most of us. I think at one time or another said, "What's wrong with you? You should look at all you got. What's
yeah.
wrong with you?"
Yeah,
you know.
No, definitely. No, I agree.
Are we doing some proclamation for mental
health? Oh, for
yes.
Ned.
Yeah, we're going to. I was talking to Ned earlier. Yeah. What kind of do you want to?
No, you do that. I don't know if I would know who would you present it to.
Well, that's.
Well, I mean.
It's a good question.
Yeah. Have it at the general meeting or proclamation and maybe put these around. Do we have trees out in the front? Because I think that's what they're doing, right? They're tying these ribbons around the trees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or, and I'm sure there's
but,
I have to ask the city.
But is it, if we're doing a proclamation, or should we be doing it with our own county mental health?
I would bring up the commissioner
of mental health in
the county, but
during the legislative meeting in May, right?
Yeah.
But it's to whom do we present the proclamation? I think
yeah,
that's
what
the question
individual
for, oh, yeah.
do we present
right.
it with the... would it be the director of public health, because she's now public health, mental health?
Sure, yeah, that may be.
Well, who has the ability to make a proclamation? The chairman does.
Yeah.
And the county executive.
We do.
Okay.
Yeah. We do. Okay, so the chairman will make a proclamation and offer it to social services.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean,
yeah.
Health.
The director. Yeah.
The commissioner of mental health.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then have Tina come up and.
Yeah,
I mean,
you can invite her
up
too.
You might as well invite Mental Health Association of
yeah.
Ulster County
yeah.
and help reach
out to
Mental Health.
Yeah.
Ulster County Mental
yeah.
Health
yeah.
too, right?
What month is Mental Health Month?
May.
It's
May.
May.
Okay.
May. We got a month.
Okay. Well, look, Craig, take care of that with Nettie.
Okay. That works.
Wonderful.
Because you
want to
leave anybody out who's already offering services, you know. Which is
mm-hmm. No, it's no. They, you know, they deserve the recognition for the work they do.
Yeah.
You know, Ellen Pentagar is the mental health MHA.
Does anybody else have new business?
I got those resolutions. I'll put them up for next month, like five weeks out. I did some stuff. I'm not sure. Maybe you and Jeanette would know. Being on the legislature, allow maybe Carl too. About Greene County through the Department of Aging has an ombudsman program for the nursing homes. There's four nursing home facilities in Greene County, and there's two ombudsmen that handle two nursing homes each, and I wasn't aware of whether or not we had something like that in Ulster County, where they're supposed to be, they're paid positions through the county in Greene County, the way it works, and it's through the Department of Aging and the Department of Health, and then they are supposed to act as like impartial liaisons between the patients and their relatives and then the nursing home facilities themselves. And I'm not sure what we have. Three nursing homes in Ulster? Oh, no, we have more than that, right? Because there's probably three in Kingston alone,
mm-hmm.
right? So do we have, like, five or six in Ulster County? I know we have...
Oh, there's more than that.
Right, there's two in Highland and, like, two in New Paltz and then three in Kingston?
Kingston alone.
There's three in
Highland.
Right, there's one in Saugerties, too.
Well,
not a nursing
home. You're talking about Greene County. The government... hires ombudsman for a private facility?
Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah, they have two full-time positions. It's through the Department of Aging. But I didn't... you know.
See, I know, I can tell you that Golden Hill has a family council, because actually I'm on the board.
Okay.
And they are, and they have meetings every month. And even the ones that no longer have a family member or relative, they visit there all the time. And the facility itself for years has had a resident council, which Ken Hyatt is the president of.
I'm not sure if that's the same.
Well, they want, if anybody, any resident has a situation or a problem, that's who they go to.
Okay. So it's just a different title, but same type of functionality.
Yeah, but it's by the people, it's by the residents themselves. The resident council is residents that are in the facility. And the family council are members, you know, families that have a loved one in there or had one in there.
Okay.
And
it's a mediator?
Any problems,
okay,
they have the authority,
okay,
to go talk to the director. Or,
so they air grievances.
Yes,
okay.
Right. Yep.
But I didn't know, something like that, and then a secondary point I wanted to make is something where I guess what you're saying would encompass some of the ideas that I have, but just something where this committee could be the recipient of any complaints that Ulster County residents have, you know, not just nursing homes within Ulster County, but ones outside of the county, you know, residents that are placed in a nursing home in one of the neighboring counties. Mm-hmm. If, you know, the family members, the patient, you know, that they have somebody that they can vent their displeasure to, and that, you know, we would sort of be like the advocate or kind of watchdog on their behalf, you know. And
wouldn't it be the commissioner of public health?
On the county level or the state level?
Either or. They're the advocate for the people.
The problem that I found, my personal dealings I had, was that the Department of Health was understaffed and didn't
I would think this committee would be a little understaffed to handle their.
First off, I would not be comfortable with that.
I don't know if that's within the scope of our.
That's what I was putting up for discussion, though.
You know, we review policy and contracts and so forth.
You would have to, Chris, if you have that much of an interest in it, I just told you what Golden Hill does. You would have to. Go speak to each one of them and see what they have in place, because they might very well have what the county nurse, what also, now it's not county nursing home, but Golden Hill now has, because
hospitals.
I don't think that they would. You're not at liberty to just walk in, you know, and go talk to residents in there. I mean, this is their home.
And, oh yeah, right.
Yeah,
right,
you can't just decide to walk in, say, some night and say, how's things going?
Not how it works. No, I meant in terms of, like, if there was some sort of, like, task force or something through the committee where that, you know, it would, I guess, because these other agencies are in place, it would probably just be sort of like a documentation process where it's like, you know, complaints would be vented to our committee and then it's documented and then the information is forwarded on. But the fact that it's reviewed by, like, the Ulster County Legislative Healthcare Committee gives it perhaps more validity, or it gives it another layer of, you know, like a governing body that's, you know, essentially listening to the complaints that are being vented and presented.
Well, I can only speak on the one nursing home that I'm completely aware of, and their process is, it's twofold. As I said, they have a resident council and they have a family council, and that's exactly what they're there for.
I think Northeast has something similar to that. I think that they have a family council.
Yeah.
I think that it might be wise to maybe just reach out to the Office of the Aging, to Ann Cardinelli, and ask her, you know, does she interact with the seniors in our nursing homes in Ulster County, or do they offer them any kind of service or any kind of information? Because I remember when we were, you know, going through the process of selling Golden Hill, there was a, and this has always been this way since the the beginning of time with nursing homes, they were worried about cherry picking. And what cherry picking is that the healthcare facilities come in and pick out the best patients that are going to make them the most money and try to get them to come to their facility. And they try to get doctors also to prescribe this as this is where you want to go because they have the best this or they have the best that. And I thought Ann Cardinelli said that she was supposed to be the watchdog.
You know, I forgot all about it. There is somebody working in the Office for the Aging.
Okay.
And that's precisely their job.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we have something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if it still is. It was when it was county-owned.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They
didn't have to worry about
folding
up cherry picking because that was the last resort.
Yeah, let's find that out.
No, it's weird. I just happen to know from my dealings, the ones in Greene County, the two ombudsmen, like every facility is private. Like none of the ones are state, you know, so like...
Or county, now.
Yeah, or county, right? They're all private. So
I would think that somebody within the facility would be in charge of addressing.
Oh, they
those.
Do. They have their own
ombudsman.
They
yeah.
have volunteers. Yeah, yeah they're
no different than like
patient advocates.
Like federal ADA law, the municipalities are.
I think you have to have.
They're mandated to have what they consider. It's an ADA coordinator. That is basically there to air grievances, and so I would think that there would, for most things, you know, especially nursing homes, considering the number of complaints that they would receive, would have some sort of personnel that would address those issues. But it's definitely something to look into.
Yeah,
I'll ask. Can I go in the?
Call Ann
on behalf of the committee.
Yeah,
absolutely. And just ask her what she's doing, you know, in nursing homes. It would be a big undertaking for us. I'm not qualified
to
somebody in the face and say, "Oh, really?" You know, okay. And then what are you gonna do?
And I'm not open to pain.
I'm not open
to pain.
Dealing with family members,
employees,
or 4 hours.
I mean, HIPAA rule.
Oh, HIPAA rule.
Sounding board.
I was just throwing it out there.
We have a consumer affairs department, and we
brainstorming. I wasn't necessarily going to go anywhere.
Eric Schneiderman's office there, the Attorney General's office. If you had to, you know, bring stuff forth.
Oh, yeah.
The state has also, so, and you know, because you probably went those routes.
So, Chris, what resolutions, if I might ask, are you bringing forth? You said resolutions.
Well, one would be to the U.S. Congress to reform HIPAA.
Right.
And one would be to the state legislature to add some specific language to state penal code law section 175, falsification of business records. There's no specific language in there that directs law enforcement in how to conduct investigations that take place when there's falsification or omissions of business records in the healthcare industry. Mm-hmm. It was just something I came across in my research.
Yeah.
And actually HIPAA, the main intent and purpose of HIPAA isn't to protect your medical records, your identity, or your Social Security number. The main intent and purpose of HIPAA, enacted by Congress in 1996, is to reduce Medicaid and Medicare costs.
I have to tell you, really, I was surprised when you raised that point.
Yeah.
Because that isn't right, you know, that you should be entitled to all records of a loved
right,
one,
and
you
I
know,
show
if you're especially, but like he said, they will not share what they write down, for instance, hospitals or
nursing homes,
probably anybody.
Yeah.
What they write down for payment, you're not able to get a copy of that. If it was, say, his father, he wasn't able to get a copy to see what they were charging the insurance company for.
It's even,
and then he found out that it wasn't right.
It's when they summarize and conflate your medical records, like your doctor's notes, nurse's notes, PT notes, when it's electronically disseminated between like a nursing home, hospital, doctor's office, you yourself, the patient, your healthcare proxy, your power of attorney within your family, you're not allowed to see those medical records that were sent from the health institution to the insurance company if they're electronically sent in the form of an email, a facsimile, or a telephone call. And in nowadays, the 21st century, everything is sent. Nothing's sent first-class mail anymore.
Yeah.
So the only way you can see those records is if there is a court subpoena requesting them. And I showed it to Chairman Lopez, and I showed it to Jeanette, Vice Chairman Provenzano, about the letter that I received back from Aetna, where they were basically hiding themselves from using that as an insulated layer so that they wouldn't have to provide that information to me. And, you know, they were using HIPAA to hide behind so that they, you know, were basically stating that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to seek out Maurice Hinchey, and I want to have a private conversation with Maurice and find out next time I see him around at a function. I'm going to, you know, get him in a private conversation because he had been in office for, you know, like, say, 3.5 years or a little more when all this stuff went down in Congress. And I want to find out from Congressman Hinchey what he was told about HIPAA, you know, prior to him voting on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it just doesn't make sense. You know, it's obviously something that was cooked up.
That part of it is not working in your favor. But I do agree with the fact that, you know, your medical history should be private if you wish.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Right.
Well, I mean, if your wife or husband or child is entitled.
No, absolutely.
They should be entitled to everything.
Yeah.
But you yourself aren't entitled
fraud.
To it.
I mean, fraud in the fact that they're billing, they're telling you that you're treating your loved one for something and they're really treating them for something else and they're getting money from the insurance company
that's why
I don't know why the insurance companies wouldn't want to show it to you because it would like a verification.
is your
patient getting this treatment or not? You know,
this is what's happening is when an insurance company denies you coverage. Okay, there's a diagnosis that's transmitted. You know, in the conflation and summary of the doctor's notes, nurse's notes, physical therapy notes, when they're disseminated back to the insurance company. That language within the email or within the facsimile, you're not allowed to see it. It's considered protected proprietary information. That's what the representative in the HIPAA member rights office told me.
Mm-hmm.
He said patients aren't allowed to see it because it's considered protected proprietary information.
The denial.
So if you get denied coverage, you call your insurance company. And you say, how come I wasn't, you know, given coverage for this? I feel I'm entitled to it under my insurance policy. If you're fortunate enough to get a empathetic ear through the customer service representative, they'll tell you verbally, okay, this is the reason why. And then if you say, gee, could I see a copy of it? Where is that? Was that faxed to you or was that emailed to you? Then they'll put you on hold and they'll come back on. They'll say, no, you're not allowed to see that unless there's litigation involved. And then if you look at it even further, you're not allowed access to it. Like if you press them and keep pressing them, finally they'll get back to you. And you have to get a hold of somebody within the insurance company, within the HIPAA member rights division of the company. They'll tell you that no, you're not allowed to see this information unless you have a subpoena. So, I mean, obviously.
Well, you know, there is a New York State office, insurance office, that if, because I used it one time, years and years and years ago, I had a terrible car accident. And I had to have therapy probably for about 7 months. And all of a sudden, I got the refusing to pay. I'm like, what? I mean, it was a lot of money. And because they said it was a pre-existing condition. So I thought, oh my God. At that time, I thought I was who I was working for. But I knew that there was an agency at the state level. And I wrote to them. And they sent a letter back with a case number and all that. But everything had to be in writing. And it took a while, probably a course of a year. But it ended up being paid by the insurance company.
I actually contacted.
And if I didn't know that, I mean, you would just go ahead and pay
Is that health insurance fraud?
$8,000-$9,000 bill.
Mm-hmm.
That was health. That was the New York State Health Insurance Fraud Division. Is that who you contacted?
It's not fraud. I don't think it's called fraud. It's just,
there is a division called the New York State Health.
Yeah, I think it's just New York State. Fraud. I got it home. What they call it, and the phone number. But I've used it, and I've given that to some people too. You know, if you're denied a claim. Because they do the investigation. I just had to provide them the dates, you know, doctor's reports and stuff like that. And amazing, I swear, I'm shocked. I didn't think I'd ever win.
Some people are aware of this. I had a private conversation with Cecilia Kacik, and I was speaking to her chief of staff before I had discussed the issue with her. She was at a town hall meeting in Saugerties last week.
Mm-hmm.
And her chief of staff, he's a very well-versed, very bright guy, and he knew exactly what I was talking about. He was virtually completing my sentences before I even got them out. And so he knew all about this. And there's been a couple other people that I've spoken to that are aware of it. It's just not readily well-known, and, you know, where a lot of people have this information, it's that prevalent, but... it's definitely factual, and there's a lot of people that are in, agencies on the, like, when I did call the state insurance fraud division, I spoke to somebody, sounded like a bright guy, he kind of had a chip on his shoulder, but he was totally unaware of this, he was rather skeptical even, and so it's something that I think definitely, you know, it obviously, what I would be working on would be these two separate resolutions, one to amend the law on the state level with the falsification of business records, and the other one would be to Congress. And, I've already spoken to Chris Gibson's office about it, and I think I would contact probably two or three other congressmen in our adjacent area, so it's a bipartisan type thing. And I've been in contact with Assemblyman Cahill's office, with some of his aides, about the falsification of business records on the state level. And with Senator Kacik.
And what did they say?
They said that it sounded... I spoke personally to Cecilia Kacik about it myself, and then I spoke to basically his entire staff at the Kingston office. I was at a meet and greet for Sean Eldridge about a month and a half ago before one of our meetings, and they were all in a particular corner of the house over on St. James Street, and it was an opportunity for me that was like, you know, Thomas Hoffa and I forget her first name, Murphy, and the other one that's on maternal leave now. And so there was like three of his aides were all right there. And so I was able to sort of broach the subject with them very succinctly and quickly, you know, before I was going up to our legislative monthly meeting here. So then I'll just follow up and I'll, you know, contact like Pete Lopez, a couple other state level representatives, and then got to get my work cut out for me and start getting in with Chris Ragucci, and we'll put it all together.
Very good.
Good luck.
Right. Anything else?
I'll make a motion for adjournment.
What you do?
I'll second.
What I do?
Very good.
Mm-hmm. How's the bridge going?
Oh, we got some issues.
Yeah.
Going all right though.
Who's the contractor for that?
There's not one. It's a consortium.
Many?
Billions.
Yeah.
Billion-dollar bridge.
Trailer Brothers, American Bridge, HDR, and Granite. Along with another...
Your peanuts compared to the bridge in Mount Marion.
29 or 30 subcontractors.
Wow.
Okay. I got 41 in the second.